This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inside Pitch. I want to welcome everybody around the world. I'm your host, Peter Caliendo. Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. Listen, get a free audiobook download. It's a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/InsidePitch. You know, there's over 180,000 titles you could choose from on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MPS player. Now, today, we're going to be discussing the best pitching throwing research in the world, which is medically backed. And then we're also going to talk about the epidemic of arm injuries at the youth level, how that can be preventable, not to mention if you're going to have a pitching coach, how to pick one, make sure he's teaching the right stuff, he's got the research, and finally, some myths about pitching and some absolutes that must be done to make sure that young players are throwing the ball properly, fundamentally strong. Okay, so now let's get started with our first guest, Mark Sheahan, the National Pitching Association Chicago, a close confidant of the best pitching throwing coach in the world, Tom House, a great friend of ours and definitely one of the best pitching people and throwing experts in the world. Also, he's the owner of the MPA, the only medically backed program. Mark Sheahan was the 2014 Collegiate Baseball News Tom House Teaching Professional of the Year. He's coached on the Great Lakes USA Baseball National Team Identification Program as a scout. I had the pleasure of having him on Caliendo Sports International trips, one of them being the Dominican Republic, which we're going to briefly talk about in a little bit. He was the pitching coach, did an outstanding job. He'll tell you a little bit about the trip. So right now, I'd like to welcome Mark to the Inside Pitch. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Pete. Thanks. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on your show. Really excited about it.
Well, I know you got a lot going on. You're very busy. You just did an interview with, I believe, a Japanese reporter.
For a Japanese paper. Had it yesterday. And I'll tell you what, the guy came prepared. He knows his stuff.
And you told me it was a two-hour interview.
It was a two-hour interview. I expected it. We both expected it to be about an hour, but it turned into 2 hours.
He must be writing a book.
It seemed like it. It certainly did.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I'm excited. Looking forward to seeing it. We'll place the article on our website, the Inside Pitch Podcast. So we'll do that. Go ahead, Mark. Did you want to say something?
No, I just said, yeah, that's a great idea. I think that article comes out like March 10th or something. So
great. We'll get that out.
I know you're well connected in the Japanese community, so that'll be...
Everybody in Japan to know about the MPA. So this is, the show's going to be going on in Japan, so there'll be a lot of people that also hear about it even more. The first thing I'd like you to do briefly, you and I got a chance to coach together in the Dominican Republic. Just give me a little brief background, what you thought about the trip and how everything went.
Oh, I thought the trip was actually, it was one of my top highlights ever involving baseball. I thought the cultural aspect of it was eye-opening. When you get down into an area like the Dominican Republic and you see the passion that those kids have for the game, they're very limited economically. So their equipment is minimal. I think it was kind of eye-opening for the kids, including my 14-year-old son, Quinn, who went with us, to see that, you don't need to have a $400 bat or $500 baseball glove, that it's not just about the equipment, but it's about the time you put in and the passion you have for the game. So it was an amazing experience. I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
That's great. And we saw, obviously, our kids are spoiled in the U.S. and they got to have the best glove, best bat, and, some forget about the training aspect, the time that you need to spend to become a better player.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting. And then to have the opportunity to watch a few major league scouts look at some of the local Dominican kids, I think that was pretty pretty awesome for not only myself, but I think all the kids and parents, all the coaches, everybody that was involved in the trip.
Well, great. I know we had a great group, so I know I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
All right,
let's jump into it because we, here at the show, we like to jump into the substance of it right away, get to the heart of the matter. Let's talk about the National Pitching Association. I know you've been with them, with Tom, for over 10 years. You've been a close confidant of his, working all over the U.S. and other areas. Tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll get started with that.
Okay. Well, you know, Tom has been doing research even when he was playing in his playing days back in the 70s. I think in the off season he was working at the San Diego Baseball Academy, which I think you spent some time there too, Coach?
Yep, a long time ago.
Yeah, right. And then from there, you know, once his playing career ended, he coached for another 15 or 16 years in the majors. And over in Japan, and all the while doing research in the off season. Well, actually during the season end, but primarily in the off season. And then in mid to late 1990s, he started the National Pitching Association, which was preceded by can't remember the name of the company. Was it Biomechanics?
Biomechanics. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I think. When I know you knew, well, you knew Tom for a long time, but I know you also spent some time with him when he had Biomechanics. So NPA in the mid to late 1990s, based in San Diego through 2007. And then he moved the NPA to his alma mater, University of Southern California, in 2007, and teamed up with the medical school there and also started the RDRBI, which is the Rod Dedeau Research and Baseball Institute. It's a nonprofit arm of the National Pitching Association and part of the USC medical school. So I started with Tom. I think I first started training in about 2005. You know, 10 years later, here we are with NPA Chicago. We're expanding to Boston, Georgia, Texas, Alaska, Hawaii. And then with you, I think we're going to do NPA International, which will kind of
take it all over the world. And here,
yeah, you're right. Dang right. Canada, Italy, we're going to take everything. Japan, Korea, all over. China.
And the thing about it, you know, as a coach, instructor, you know, I'm very careful what I teach, because I want to make sure it's the right thing. I think coaches need to make sure. And, you know, the research and the development that Tom's program does, I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, we talk about it's, I don't know if the word is medically backed or researched.
Yeah, tell medically, me a little bit about that. It's medically defendable. So the Institutional Review Board of the USC Medical School, which is an oversight committee of medical personnel, doctors, orthos, and so on, they put their stamp and oversee any type of human trials or experiments that have to do with the human body. They stand behind Tom's fitness programs, mechanical teachings. They back everything Tom does. So when you talked about being careful about what you teach, you know, I look at it as a kind of a battle between opinion-based information and objective information. You've got to look at, if you look at Tom's board of directors, he's got the who's who of the medical personnel, professional athletes. All those people look over his shoulder to make sure he's doing things the way they should be done. He also has collaborations with the Titleist Performance Institute. And I'm sure you know, Pete, the golf world is eons ahead of many other sports, but more specifically baseball, when it comes to technology and research, implementing science into their teachings. So there's a big difference between the National Pitching Association and any other program that's out there. I know there's a lot of... there's some really good marketing people when it comes to baseball instruction, but what really stands behind their teachings? Is it opinion-based or is it scientific?
Yeah, so we encourage, obviously, coaches, not just in the U.S., all over the world, go to NPA, Google it, and then Mark will give you the website in a minute here. But, you know, and get your research done. Understand the research before you start teaching it, because remember, we're influencing some really young players, and they look up to you. So anything you say, they're going to do. Now, we've all been there. We've all made mistakes. You know, if we can correct those mistakes and go on, I think that would be great. Now, Mark, tell us, what's the research showing? Why are young kids getting hurt? Why are these kids having surgeries at a young age?
It's almost reached epidemic proportions. That comes right from Dr. James Andrews, the preeminent orthopedic surgeon in the world. Kids today, both kids and professional athletes, get hurt for three primary reasons. Number one, they're either throwing too many pitches off a mound in competition. Number two, they lack efficient mechanics to handle that pitch load. Or number three, they lack the right, the functional fitness to handle the workload that they're going through. You know, today's game, it's especially at all levels, really, it's turned into a year-round sport. And that's where a lot of problems are created, because kids are just, you know, they're pitching for one team in the summer, maybe one or two teams in the fall, and then you've got lessons all winter long. Spring season, next you know, is right around the corner, so they don't really get a break. Now, the other side of that equation is, you know, there are a lot of people who profess that every kid should have somewhere between 4 weeks and 3 months off from throwing a baseball. But the science behind that states shows that they should take 6 weeks off pitching off a mound, but not throwing. They should throw every day. And I had an interesting exchange yesterday with the Japanese reporter when he pulled out a list of Japanese pitchers that have gone through Tommy John surgery. I think it was from 1983 to the current completed season. It fit on one page. And then he pulled out the Tommy John surgeries in the major leagues just in 2015, in the 2015 season. That was two pages long. So he asked me why the discrepancy. Why is it so much more prevalent in the United States?
Good question.
It is. But, and our answer lays in the training methods. Okay. So we talked about the difference between, and you're very familiar with this, I'm sure, Pete, because you spent a lot of time in Japan. But the Japanese, they practice every day, all year round.
Yep.
Right. And Americans, when do they practice? It's only when it's organized by the parents. Okay. So, and then we also have that recommendation of taking, you know, 4 weeks to 3 months off from throwing. So I think, and research shows that you shouldn't take time off from throwing. You should throw something every day. Footballs, baseballs, tennis balls, skipping rocks. I mean, you know, when we grew up, we were throwing something every day. Rocks at cans or skipping rocks across the river. Yep. But we threw something every day. And today's generation just doesn't throw enough. They pitch too much. They pitch too much off a mound, but they don't throw enough.
You know, I quickly going back to the Japanese, I mean, and I just like to add that, you know, spending time there, you know, Japanese also, as you said, they, you know, they train, you know, they throw all year round, they play catch all the time, you know, but they also are incredibly physically fit in the right areas.
They have a lot of emphasis on the fitness side of the of baseball too, right?
Yep. And their mechanics, you know, I mean, they're flawless. I know guys that aren't allowed to throw a second pitch. I had some guys on our team that were 21 years old, weren't allowed to throw a second pitch. They control a fastball, and their mechanics were perfect.
Right. Yeah. But you know what else is interesting, Pete? He also showed me a printout of Matsusaka, Yu Darvish, and Tanaka of their high school pitching logs. I think Darvish in, what was it, 2003. I don't remember the years exactly, but he pitched in four consecutive days. The third day, he threw 17 innings, 250 pitches. Yeah, I was shocked when I saw that.
Yeah, we just saw research recently. I remember getting many emails on pitchers, maybe even about 6 months ago, two high school pitchers that threw over 400 pitches on a weekend. I had guys who told me who were on our team that were high school players that throwing 400 pitches in 2 days. So, right. You know, we're not encouraging that, but it just goes to show. I mean, when you look at, you know, the Japanese since 1983, roughly, you know, one page of Tommy John surgeries, and then we have just in the major leagues, two pages. We're not even counting the young kids.
Right, in 1 year.
So here's the question. All right, I'm a parent. I'm listening to the show. I don't, you know, I'm not a baseball person. You know, I mean, I haven't coached baseball. I haven't taught in schools. How do I pick a pitching coach? I know that's kind of a general topic or question.
Yeah, it's a tough one, too, because there's a lot of self-proclaimed pitching gurus probably in every city. But really what you have to look at is where does their information come from? Number one. Is it backed by science and research? The easiest way to go about that is go to the nationalpitching.com website. At this time, we have all the regional directors listed. Right. For instance, myself in Chicago, you and internationally. I have at my disposal, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 8 different instructors in Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana that I can send people to, depending on where they live. So that's your number one resource, in my opinion.
That's perfect. And I understand that, because if you go to a research-based company like National Pitching Association, again, nationalpitching.com, you can see the people there and research your pitching coaches. That's a great way to start. Okay, let's talk about something that's been out there for a while now. I mean, it's brought up by Major League Baseball. It's brought up by a lot of people. Velocity. You know, nowadays you can't throw hard, you can't go to higher levels. And, you know, explain that. Is that true? If that's true, what can players do? MPA has a velocity program that kind of scares me a little bit when you use the word velocity, because, you know, everybody wants to just throw hard. I know that's not what the program's only about, but explain the two things, what it entails.
All right. So, it is a hot topic these days, both from a performance level and a health level. Where to start with that? Well, velocity primarily comes from three things. So there's three ingredients for velocity. The first one is ground force production. Ground force production is basically going as far and as fast as you can go from the rubber to your target. The second component is torque. Torque is hip and shoulder separation and your body's ability to store that energy from the previous joint and deliver that energy up to the ultimately up into the baseball. The third ingredient is strength, functional strength. So if you have more ground force production, it creates more torque and you have to use less strength, or what we like to call throw hard easy. You look at guys like Nolan Ryan. There's a perfect example of throwing hard easy, nice and smooth. Good ground force production moving to the plate, excellent torque. And then, you know, what did Nolan pitch until he was 49, I think, right?
Yep.
So ingredient number three, the strength portion, all right? So the NPA Velocity Program, it's called Velocity primarily because, well, quite frankly, because velocity sells. Healthy shoulders do not. If we call it a healthy shoulder program, nobody would buy it. Nobody would participate in it, more importantly. So that program started out as a health first program. So with a little background here, Tommy John surgeries result in about an 85 to 87% succession rate, where the kid gets back up on the mound and pitching at his previous levels. Shoulder injuries, shoulder surgeries, labrum, rotator cuff, the number is about 23%. So Tom's goal was just to try to figure out how to fix shoulders and get kids back into the game. So he took 10 former major leaguers and minor leaguers that suffered shoulder injuries, and his goal was only to get them back up on the mound. So he went through a number of different trials, protocols, of things that he'd been researching for years, or really decades. And he came across the one that kept popping up was the weighted ball program and going through holds with the weighted balls. Mm-hmm. So I think it was 18 weeks later, he got all 12 kids or all 10 kids up back up on the mound throwing, which was, in his mind, a successful experiment right there. But all of them were throwing harder than they'd ever thrown before. Okay, so the velocity was actually discovered by accident. Health first, velocity comes at with a healthy shoulder. So there's a lot of people out there, a lot of copycats that are coming up with their own velocity programs.
That scares me a little bit. You come up with
it might
gain velocity, right? But you don't know what it's doing if it's doing any damage to the body.
Exactly. So the NPA Velocity Program is backed by the USC Medical School. It's been poked at, looked at from every angle, and so it's defendable. Our program is the only one out there, okay, only one that's medically defendable.
Okay, now, here's what I love about it also, expanding on it. MPA is now doing research on other aspects of the game, such as hitting, catching. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's tough not to do some research on hitting when you're researching pitching. There's a new method, training style for hitting that Tom is about to release here real soon. It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be different than anything else you've seen out there as far as hitting goes. That's about all I can tell you about it right now, because it's gonna come in with a big splash. It's gonna, you know, there's gonna be a lot of there's more hitting people out there than there are pitching, so I'm sure it's going to be looked at with many critical eyes and with a lot of maybe disdain. I don't really know.
Mark, anytime you're at the top of the hill, because you know Tom has the best research available to him. He's a brilliant person. He's got great people working with him. You're going to get criticized. You know what I love about MPA is that, again, it's medically, but it's scientifically based. A lot of the things that the research comes up with, whether it's hitting, whether it's how to catch a baseball, whatever it may be. So I'm looking forward to seeing all that. I wanted to back up just a second. I forgot to ask you this. You know, we talked about velocity. How important is it?
Well, right or wrong, it's what everybody wants at every level. High school coaches, college coaches, and then the major leagues. I mean, it makes perfect sense. The batter has less time to react to the pitch. It's going to be tougher to hit the baseball in simple. Mm-hmm. So, there's still, you still have to be able to throw strikes, and you still have to be able to command your pitches and throw more than just a fastball. I mean, in the major leagues, they're going to put wood just about anything. I don't care how hard you're throwing it.
Let me ask you this. Velocity, you throw hard. You can also locate when you throw hard, correct?
Right. In many cases, right. Especially if you have a little more ground force production, it's easier to throw strikes. But the point, at velocity at the younger ages, at the lower levels, you can get away with not so good a location. But as you climb the ladder, obviously you be able to locate all your pitches a little better. So there's a lot of kids in college at the D1 level that can throw the out of the ball. But if you can't locate your pitches, the batters at the higher levels lay off the pitches that aren't in the strike zone. So,
right. Okay. All right. Now, listen, Mark, just hang tight. We're going to take a short break, just about a minute for all our listeners. This is important for us because it's what makes the show go on. If you're buying stuff on Amazon, go to our website, click on Amazon banner. That doesn't cost you anything. It just gives us credit, helps the show. So go to Amazon.com. When you go there, you can also buy my youth baseball drills book. That's available. And don't forget, email me if you're interested in ordering my 7-set baseball instructional DVD, which includes over 100 drills, skills, descriptions of the fundamentals, games that you can play with kids. Just got a lot of great information for your practices. You can order that by going to petercaliendo@icloud.com. Mention the MPA interview, and the 7-set series will be $125, which would include shipping and handling. Normally, that's about $145. So you're getting a great discount there. If you like the show, do us a favor. After you listen to the show, go to iTunes or Stitcher or any major podcast outlet and click subscribe. Give us a rating. Hopefully it'll be a 5-star rating and review. But we'd love to have the rating. Later on, I'll let you know how to email me on any questions you might have.
Youth Baseball Talk with Jim Cromer.
Where did that come from for you, like the throwing more?
I had a great guru in Johnny Sain. Johnny Sain was the most successful pitching coach in the history of Major League Baseball. And I wanted to listen to the greatest teachers in the history of the game. Well, I only met a couple. Johnny Sain, Bobby Cox, Jim Beacham, wonderful teachers. And then I ran into about 250 to 300 coaches that had no clue what the hell they were doing.
Listen at youthbaseballtalk.com or download the show on iTunes or Stitcher.
Now, let's come on back with Mark Sheehan of the National Pitching Association, a Tom House program. We're discussing pitching, throwing, the science behind it that hopefully will help coaches. So, Mark, let's do this. Let's get into another facet of the game, the pitching game, something you and I discussed about, and a lot of people were surprised when we were down in the Dominican Republic, about icing. After a pitcher throws, do they ice? What do they do?
Yeah, icing is another long-worn tradition in baseball. Icing is, you know, your body's natural defense mechanism for trauma is to swell. So when you ice, you're simply delaying the inevitable. It's going to swell anyway. So the best way to handle or to help recover and repair from a pitching outing is actually aerobic activity. So after your outing, you have a 3-hour window in which you should get 20 minutes, a minimum of 20 minutes of aerobic activity. You want to get the blood flowing through the body and flushing out all the bad stuff, flushing out the lactic acid. There's a lot of pitchers who still swear that icing helps them. And, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody don't ice if you think it works for you, if it keeps you healthy, go right ahead. But research shows you're better off doing aerobic activity to flush out all that bad stuff. And the most important part is within 3 hours of your pitching out, you can cut back your recovery by a full day if you get 20 minutes of aerobic activity within that 3-hour window.
Okay, and now let's discuss this part, because I've got a list of questions here that I think that our coaches around the world and in the U.S. are going to really enjoy, because these are questions that come up typically. So let's start with a few of them. You got a 10-year-old, you got a 20-year-old. You train them any different?
Oh, most certainly. And I think that's probably the number one issue with most pitching coaches is they train everybody the same way. So NPA instructors look at each individual in what we call windows of trainability. You're either in a learn to learn window, which is the first window, the really young kids, which is also a speed window or nerves. You want to focus on making them go fast, work on neural pathway programming, which is just getting the kids to be repeatable and pattern. And that's usually between ages 6 and about 12 or 13, or just before they hit testosterone. Then you look at the second window, which is a learn window or a strength window, focusing on muscle. That's from once a kid hits testosterone till about 16. You want to focus on, you know, the emphasis should be on strength. You also want to keep them, keep training the nervous system, the neural pathway. But strength is an emphasis there. Then once they get to about 15, 16, 17, that's a skill window or a learn to relearn, where we try to rewire them. So if you're asking a 6-year-old to be skillful and they don't lack the functional strength or the nervous system, the wiring, so to speak, mm-hmm. to become skillful, you're kind of dooming them to failure. Mm. So, all three of those, whether it's speed, strength, or skill, everybody's going to get a taste of something, but you need to emphasize the area that they're in age-wise. Okay. So, you can't ask a 6-year, 10-year-old to be a 20-year-old skill-wise. It just doesn't work.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, we've talked about it briefly, but I want to hit on this because this happens a lot. Matter of fact, I'm on Facebook a lot, and I see all these videos of these pitchers thrown off the mound in the winter, especially in the cold areas. You talked about it. Tell us, when is it good to start throwing off the mound in the winter, indoors, or even outdoors, I guess? And why is it bad to do it at a certain time?
Well, it's funny. I had a conversation with a new student in December who came to see me. His elbow was bothering him. And, I go through my questionnaire asking them, you know, when did you throw last? They fill out a full questionnaire with a bunch of questions on it, but we talk about health history a lot. So I was talking to him about what he'd been doing since his summer season ended in August. And he told me, well, I do 2 lessons a week with my pitching coach. And then I started asking him what they did during their lesson. And he said, the normal stuff. We get up on the mound and I pitch and he watches me. And so I asked him how many pitches he threw every lesson. And he thought somewhere around 70 to 80, which probably means closer to 100. And so I asked him, I said, okay, so you're throwing 150 to 200 pitches per week off a mound. Do you think there's any professional pitchers that are spending that much time on the mound throwing that many pitches? No wonder why your elbow hurts, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't like using the mound at all until a couple of weeks before their season starts. So pro guys, they're reporting to spring training here in a few days. They're going to start. They should be throwing once off a mound at a minimum right now. But it doesn't take the body long to acclimate to the slope of the mound. So throwing on flat ground is easier on your arm. A lot of people worry about
that.
Research
shows that throwing off
research
a mound.
Research shows, right. Throwing on a mound is harder on your arm. It multiplies the forces by 6 when you're up on a hill. So throwing on flat ground is the way to train to make sure you stay healthy. You're still going to be able to execute your pitches, all of your pitches. It's easier when you get up on a mound than it is to throw on flat ground. So train on flat ground, compete on a hill.
Okay, super. I mean, I think for our coaches listening, that's important because I see a lot of guys throwing in the winter on a mound. And I'm assuming, you know, your bigger, stronger guys, I mean, you got major league guys, you know, they're fully developed. If they get in a mound a little earlier, that's a big difference than an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old throwing in January in a mound.
Oh, most definitely. Especially, you know, at the 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, they don't have the functional strength to handle the extra stress that the mound creates.
And their mechanics aren't the best. So, that sounds like just, you know, recipe for disaster.
It is. You're exactly right, Pete. Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm a young kid. I'm a pitcher. Or I'm a coach and I've got 12-year-olds or 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds. You know, where do you start? Do you start from the stretch, the wind up? Does it make a difference? That's a big question always out there for young coaches because a lot of these guys don't have a lot of time to train these kids.
Right. My experience has been that the younger kids will throw a lot more strikes from the stretch than they will from the mound. The mound, in many cases, creates more opportunities for something to go wrong with balance and posture and all that extra movement just makes it more difficult for the kid to control their body. So we kind of take the approach of, you know what Occam's razor is? The simplest solution or the path of least resistance and fewest assumptions. So if the kid's pitching from the stretch, he's got less to worry about, fewer things to control. And all the most important pitches happen from the stretch anyway when you have runners on base. A lot of people think that the windup makes you throw harder. If you are throwing harder out of the windup, there's probably something mechanically inefficient in your delivery from the stretch. You should be able to throw just as hard from both.
Interesting. Great to know. So young coaches out there, that's something great to know. And I know, I mean, I'm sure most coaches would agree if from the stretch you have more success, you know, throwing the ball over the plate for strikes, that's going to be a big advantage because obviously you'll be a lot more successful.
Most definitely.
The game will speed up too. We don't have to wait for guys to throw strikes all day, which becomes boring. All right, now here's a hot topic, difficult topic. You know, throwing sidearm, good, bad, indifferent.
Okay, that's probably one of the more common topics that I encounter in my instruction. So a lot of people think that throwing sidearm is hard on your arm, but if you look at pictures of Major League Baseball pitchers at release point, they all have a couple things in common. Their eyes are level, so their head is over their belly button, and their glove is somewhere in front of them between their shoulders and their hips, okay, between the belly button and the chin. So everybody has a little different arm slot. It's going to be somewhere between sidearm and 3/4. So the most common teach of get on top, meaning you want to get your hand up as high as possible, the only way the human body can throw on top is you have to move your head out of the way, which means your eyes are going to tilt, okay? So the body needs to sense stability, and it doesn't respond efficiently to skilled movements when synergists are sending instability messages to the brain, and that's when our eyes are not level. Okay, balance is the most important thing to us. We're bipedal creatures. We have to have balance. And that's when the body senses stability. Okay, so the body's natural protective mechanism is to tighten up to protect unstable positions or movements when we sense instability. Okay, rotational athletes, pitchers, baseball players, are only good as the motions they can either stabilize or control. So you're only as efficient as your worst movement and only as strong as your weakest link. We profess that all the time. Kids have to throw with their eyes level. If that puts their arm in a sidearm slot, that's their natural arm slot. They're going to be somewhere between sidearm and 3/4. So throwing sidearm is not hard on your arm if your eyes are level.
Okay, but now if we're throwing it, you know, straight over the top, that's going to change our head angle and our eyes, correct?
Correct. Right. That adds more stress to your shoulder and your elbow. Throwing on top is not a good teach. It's hard on the body. That's to throw. The body tightens up. I'm sorry, Pete, go ahead.
No, that's good to know because a lot of coaches do teach on top.
Right. They talk about creating angle or downward plane. If you think about it as a hitter, it's easier to hit easier to pick up the pitch up high than it is someone who has a lower arm slot.
All right, so let's talk about the hottest topic. This can be probably discussed till the end of the world, the curveball. What age should it be thrown? Is it good for your arm? Is it bad for your arm? There's all kinds of theories out there. What's the research say?
All right, so the latest research, this is just within the last year. Have you ever seen one of those, I think it's called a MOTUS sleeve? Anyway, it's a sleeve put over... It's a sleeve you wear over your pitching arm, and there's a little sensor around the elbow. So it measures the stress on the arm. I don't remember the exact numbers or what the calibration was, but a fastball registered something 30-something. A conventional curveball with the snapping of the wrist, turning of the wrist was 45. And a curveball taught the way, or what we call the NPA way, where you choke it, squeeze it, preset the grip in your glove, and there's no wrist turn, registered like a 14. Okay, so taught correctly, instructed correctly, the curveball is actually easier on your arm than a fastball is. Hmm. Tom will even say it took 20 some years to get the ASMI and Dr. Andrews to agree that yes, it is true. Talk correctly, the curveball is less stressful on your arm than a fastball is.
All right, now you have a coach who is not an NPA instructor, doesn't understand how to teach the curveball, hasn't taken the time to learn it. Maybe he's teaching it the way he threw it. Obviously not good. They should stick with a fastball, change up. Is that mine in the right area?
There's nothing wrong with throwing a fastball and a chip. And if it's taught incorrectly, I wouldn't allow my sons to throw it.
The coach would have to be with them, right? I mean, because a young man's going to have to understand, you know, how if he's doing it by himself, even after he was taught, am I throwing it correctly? How's he going to know unless there's a coach there?
True. Pitching instruction-wise, the kid's got to be able to throw a fastball for a strike. The second pitch they should learn is a changeup. And then once they command that, they should learn how to throw a curveball, regardless of what age they are. I've been teaching kids from 8 years old and up how to throw a curveball correctly.
Okay. All right. So for our coaches out there, more great stuff. Now, we get a lot of questions here at the Inside Pitch. You've got kids that are right-handed pitchers throwing from the right side of the mound. You got lefties throwing from the left side. Where should these kids start? Why do they make adjustments even at young ages during the game if they move right or left?
Where a pitcher stands on the rubber is determined by their back foot or their drag line. So if you stand behind a pitcher and he delivers the baseball, you're going to see the back foot drag through the dirt, through the clay. Where that line ends is critical to, number one, performance, and number two, most importantly, health. So we want that drag line to end in the middle of the rubber, going in the middle of home plate. So let's say we have a right-handed pitcher, and he stands in the middle of the rubber, and his back foot pops up off the ground about 4 inches to the third base side of the middle of the rubber, going to the middle of home plate. So all he simply needs to do is move 4 inches on the rubber closer to first base so that the drag line now ends in the middle of the rubber, going the middle of home plate. Now his center of gravity, his core, his head is all lined up for the middle of the plate, his target. So it's easier on the arm because now it allows him to square up his shoulders. So he's not going to be either under rotated or over rotated at release point, both of which are hard on the arm. And it's more difficult to locate his pitches.
And do the young kids or even the older players maybe, do they stride far enough, not far? Is it too short? There's a lot of talk about that also.
Yeah, back to ground force production. Go as far and as fast as you can go. Force equals mass times acceleration. That's what pitching's about. Move as far and as fast as you can to your target. It'll be easier on your arm. You're going to throw more strikes. You're going to have better movement. There's nothing bad about that. So,
Mark, are some kids limited on how far they can stride because of, body structure?
Not typically. I mean,
or flexibility or something. Anything? Yeah. No.
Well, if it all kind of there are a number of factors involved in stride length, lower body, leg strength obviously comes into play. How they start their wind up or stretch, the direction of their stride. By the way, direction of the stride, a lot of people think you need to go directly straight to the plate. Not true. In fact, 60% of major league pitchers stride closed or throw across their body. So they right-hander stride towards third base. 20% of them stride directly straight to the plate, and 20% stride towards first base or slightly open.
Who the most successful is Baumgarten with the Giants, and Arrieta with the Cubs, correct?
This past season, certainly, yeah. Arrieta, now the Jake stands on the third base side of the rubber. So his, now, if his drag line went backwards, which it doesn't, his drag line ends outside of the span of the pitching rubber. If he were to move over to the first base side, he would, number one, stay healthier, wouldn't wear out as fast. He kind of ran out of gas there, I think, at the end of the year. It would be easier on his arm. So if you notice at release point, Jake's got a little shoulder tilt. So mm-hmm. if he were to just move over to the first base side, get rid of the shoulder tilt, he'd get even a little crazier movement than he gets on all of his pitches. And it'd be much easier on his arm.
And when a pitcher lifts, what's the next process? Do you stop? Do you continue? Do you
We want them, as they begin lifting their front leg, they should be thrusting their hips towards the plate. Force equals mass times acceleration. Ground force production. Get your booty going to the plate. Lift your leg as high as you can lift, but you got to move fast. So a lot of people, a lot of coaches think a high leg lift with runners on base is not a good thing. It doesn't matter how high the pitcher lifts his leg, but how quickly he gets from that first movement. So when his foot starts to lift, and then gets the foot back on the ground. If they lift and get the foot back on the ground in under a second, the ball will come out of their hand between 1.25 seconds and 1.35, which means it's in the catcher's mitt about 1.75 to 1.9, right? So if the ball's in the catcher's mitt at 1.9 and they have a pop time around 2 seconds, you're looking at 3.9 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Best base runners in the game from first to second are about three. The very fastest are 3.7, but an average major league base dealer is about 4.9.
Yeah, so you're talking about a high. You know, you could lift the leg up high as long as you're coming down quick and you're going towards home.
Right. The higher you lift the leg, the harder you're going to throw, the easier it is on your arm.
You know, and that's nice to know. So you're saying the research shows the higher you lift the leg, the faster you could throw the ball, but also the stride length. Does that allow you to throw harder also?
Certainly. We go back to ground force production. Go far fast.
And what about the talk? Remember, I was taught this a long time ago. You know, if you go forward too fast, your arm's going to drag.
A late throwing arm. That's what I hear a lot. It's not a late throwing arm. It's a premature front side. So if your front side starts to open early, or especially before your front foot lands, it looks like your arm is dragging through. It's a premature front side, not a late throwing arm. That's a very common diagnosis by many coaches. So if you look at the front side first, if the front side stays closed until the front foot lands, everything's going to be fine. They're not going to have a late throwing arm.
You know, you bring up a great point, because I remember Tom talking about, and I know you have also, how important the front side is compared to the back side. The back side, the arm swing, you know, I see on MLB Network some things that are being taught by supposed experts that just drives me nuts, because they're saying that, you know, you can control your back arm. And yet I heard Tom say it's genetically. Can you explain the back arm, front arm, how important these are? Which one's more important?
Yeah, it is genetic, whatever your arm path is. So a common refrain from many coaches to me is, well, he short arms it. Well, honestly, the short armers are the guys who throw the ball the hardest. So whatever the throwing arm does, that's unique to that individual. And if you're going to change what he's doing with his throwing arm, you're going to risk increase his risk of injury. So throwing arm, glove arm, which one? The adjustment is with the glove arm. When a pitcher breaks his hands and gets into foot strike, their arms should mirror each other. So they should either be exactly opposite or equal. All right. So let me explain it this way. If you had to pitch on a tightrope, the only way you're going to stay on the tightrope is you're going to use your arms to stay in balance. That's what we use the glove and the throwing arm for. Why we separate our hands at a special time, at a certain time. So the adjustment needs to be made with the glove. Make sure the glove arm equals or is opposite of the throwing arm position.
Very interesting. I mean, this is great stuff. And, you know, for all our listeners, the inside pitch, keep listening, because the MPA is going to be in your local area. You're going to be able to, you know, attend the NBA pitching throwing classes where you can actually see the drills and how to correct all this, make the adjustments. Now, Mark, you know, we're coming down to the end. We got a few more questions, but one of the areas, if we can on the show, let's talk about some corrections. You know, let's talk about like when the lift, you know, if a guy leans back, any corrections you have that you can give our listeners on the show right now that they might be able to understand that.
The number one thing that you should look at with your pitcher, especially the really young guys, is we want everything to move to the plate. Nothing moves backwards. We don't want any forces going backwards. We talk about vectors and making sure all your vectors are going to your target. So anything not going to your target is working against what you're trying to accomplish with velocity, location, command of your pitches. So first and foremost, teach your kids to go far and fast with a nice high leg lift. The second thing you want to look at is what the pitcher's head does. So we want the pitcher's head to go only to the plate, one direction, no up or down, no left or right. So with my students, my goal is once I get a pitcher's head going directly to the plate, they're going to throw harder. They're going to throw more strikes. They're going to have much better movement on all of their pitches, and they're going to stay healthy. So you don't need to be too complicated with it. If you follow that, those two teaches, go far fast, make your head go straight to the plate, your pitcher's going to be much better off.
And coaches, you know, and parents, players are out there listening to the Inside Pitch. You have any questions, you know, feel free. Later I'll give you the email that you could email. We'll get you the answers to some of your questions you have. Mark, you know, we've talked about pitching. This has been great. Soon here, we're also going to be bringing on Tom House onto the show. We'll continue to talk more pitching and the science behind it. Explain to the listeners, what do you think the research shows? What do you know the research shows that players, young players, ought to be doing all year round? Should they be playing the sport 24 hours a day, 365 days a year?
Yeah, that's a big problem these days. A lot of kids are starting to specialize it at far too young an age. They should play all sports. They just shouldn't specialize at an early age. We talk about neuroplasticity. That's what multiple sports, different sports, will do for them. It increases their athleticism. Doing too much of anything is never a good thing. So, we encourage our kids to play multiple sports. Baseball, like most of the sports, is turning into a year-round sport for many, and it shouldn't be that way.
You know, one thing I did forget, and I was writing a note here that I wanted to ask you. You know, we talked earlier about bullpens. We talked about pitching in the winter, even flat ground. You know, should you chart number of pitches that you throw, like say during a season, if their guys are throwing in a bullpen or they're throwing bullpens after they pitch or 2 days after they pitch or whatever, should those be charted?
Not necessary. The pitches that count are game intensity competition pitches. Game pitches are totally different than bullpens and throwing on the side. You have adrenaline flowing, your fight or flight instinct. Count the pitches in a game. Don't worry about bullpens and practices. Now, if you're practicing on the mound, you have to be careful with that also. You're going to pay a bigger price if you lack efficient mechanics, and more importantly, the functional strength to handle the amount of throwing that you're doing.
No, Mark, that's outstanding. I love the show. I love what I heard. I look forward to working with MPA. The last thing that we'd like to talk about, give you an open forum here. Anything that, you know, we got coaches all over the world. We got parents. We got players listening. Anything you'd like to tell our listeners when it comes to pitching research or anything else, a little advice that you'd like to leave them with?
Yeah, we always go back to the, you know, count your pitches, make sure your mechanics are efficient, you have good mechanics, and that you're strong enough to handle that. I think in today's baseball world, on the research side, most of the big money right now is on recovery, how to recover from your outings, in addition to the right kind of fitness. So you have to be careful with weight training and the type of fitness programs that you're involved in. All the weight training programs are based in football and track, which are linear sports. Baseball, as we know, is a rotational sport. You need to focus on the backside of your body, where your decelerator muscles are. You're only able to accelerate what your body can handle in deceleration. So focus on the backside. Run backwards, jump backwards. You've got to be able to be stronger on the backside. That's what's going to keep you healthy and help you perform better. So I guess the number one piece of advice I'd give to parents out there is find your kid a good fitness program. We run a couple of fitness classes on weekends here in the Chicagoland area that focus on baseball specific, pitching specific fitness routines. It's going to keep your kid healthy and it's going to make him perform better. So that would probably be my number one bit of advice, is get in the right kind of fitness program.
You know what? And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's not an area that we had talked about. And that is so important. And I believe that we're also going to have another show that's going to talk about specifically that. So I'm really happy you brought it up. I want to thank you for being on the show, Mark. We'll look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, Pete. It was a blast. Looking forward to be here. Looking forward to those pitching tips we're going to start doing every week.
Yeah, and that's next. Thanks for the perfect introduction introduction to the next section. Folks around the world and in the U.S., we are going to be bringing Mark Sheahan back on every show at the end of the show, sometimes in the middle of the show. He will be giving us special pitching, throwing research tips, and later on it could be getting into the hitting, a lot more. So not only are you going to listen to the speaker or the guest that day, but you're also going to be able to listen to the tips from Mark Sheahan. We're looking to include videotapes on our website on those tips also. So look forward to that. Really enjoyed the show. And for everybody listening out there, don't forget, go to our Twitter page at Inside Pitch Show. Join the Twitter. We get a lot of tips there. We give a lot of tips on Twitter. We'll be giving more on our Facebook page, facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. And our website, InsidePitchPodcast.com, where we're going to include videos, structural information. Don't forget to email us if you have any questions about the topic today, any of our topics throughout all the shows. I love getting your emails, because that shows that you're really interested in the show. It shows that you want to learn. We'll get you all the information you need. Email me at peter@insidepitch.com. Again, that's peter@insidepitch.com. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, or any major podcast outlet. Click subscribe. Do us a favor. If you really love the show, give us a 5-star rating and review. That really helps us out. Remember to check out all our shows on Lineup Media Group for shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. Check it out on lineupmediagroup.com. Feel free to share all our shows on Facebook, Twitter, email, any way you can help us spread the word, because, you know, we're giving some really good information out here to coaches, and it's all free, but we need your help in spreading the word about, you know, all the information that's going out, and that would really help us if coaches and parents and players joined us on Twitter or on iTunes and all the other social medias. So remember, coaches education is the key to building a foundation of the sport.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock. Online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.